Oh, where is this radio program for seniors? I can't find it. Errol, what's this radio thing called that we're looking for seniors?
Oh, I don't know, Arthur. Isn't it wireless something or something wireless? You should have written it down when I told you to.
Hang on. I think this might be it.
You're listening to Radio Coda.
Found it.
Hello and welcome back to Radio Coda, a weekly podcast radio show for older Queenslanders, proudly brought to you by the Council on the Ageing Queensland. I'm your host Andy Neal, and as always, it's great to have your company. So grab a cuppa, put your feet up, and let's see what we've got in store for you on the show this week.
Founded in 1957, Council on the Ageing, CODA Queensland, is a not-for-profit organisation advancing the rights, needs and futures of people as we age. Working in partnership with the Queensland Government, local councils, community organisations and the community to create an age-friendly Queensland. To join or to find out more, visit cotaqld.org.au or phone 1300 738 348.
Hi, I'm Todd Rule, CEO of the Planning Institute of Australia, and I like listening to Radio Coda.
Radio Coda.
For I come from the saltwater of people, we always live by the sea. Now I'm out here west of Ellis Spring with a wife. A family and my island home, my island home, my island home is waiting for me.
It's a little known fact that there are nearly 400 uniquely different Aboriginal languages, and of those, sadly, more than 100 are at risk of being lost forever. This week on Radio Coda, a special episode celebrating NAIDOC Week 2017. This year's theme for NAIDOC Week is Our Languages Matter. Now, for a great number of Indigenous Australians, their language means far more than just a means of communicating. It is the very heart and soul of their tribe throughout history, and still so very relevant today. It defines who they are, their relatives, and those who might be strangers. It shapes the way they interact with each other and with others. It is the way each new generation learns their heritage, their culture, and those who went before them. No, it's not just about communicating conversationally. The language is filled with stories, songs, and deep cultural imagery. NAIDOC Week is the celebration of our Indigenous people, the first Australians, and their unique and beautiful culture. It serves as a reminder to us all of the rich and diverse culture and the magnificence of this island continent we all call home.
Is waiting for me, my island home, my island home, my island home, is waiting for me, my island home, my island home.
With many years' experience working with Aboriginal languages in the Northern Territory, our special guest on Radio Coda this week is Greg Dixon. Greg has facilitated community and school-based language programs, delivering training for Indigenous speakers and language workers, and as an accredited Creole English interpreter, continues to document endangered Indigenous languages. With a PhD from the Australian National University in Linguistics, and as a lecturer and researcher, Greg is currently a postdoctoral fellow at the University of Queensland with the ARC Centre of Excellence for the Dynamics of Language, and continues to carry out projects in the field surveying the dialects of Creole.
Radio Coda.
Greg Dixon, welcome to you.
Hi Andy, thank you for having me on your show.
Greg, great to have you on board. As we know, it's our NAIDOC Week special this week on Radio Coda, specifically looking at the theme for the week of Our Languages Matter. Now, you've got a rather extensive background, certainly of education and experience in the area. Can you tell us a bit about yourself, Greg? What is some of that background, that history, that learning experience you've had?
So I grew up in Brisbane and did a degree at the University of Queensland and ended up doing a double major in linguistics.
Mm-hmm.
And just because of some of the staff had had quite a bit of experience working on Aboriginal languages in the Northern Territory mostly.
Right.
So when I graduated, they were just kind of very encouraging of students to follow suit and work on Indigenous languages.
Right.
So after I graduated, one of my lecturers suggested I apply for a job in Katherine in the Northern Territory, working for a community organisation whose job it was to work on the local Indigenous languages.
Right.
And so off I went as a very naive young person.
Mm, would have been quite an adventure, Greg.
Yeah, it was. I didn't really know what I was getting myself into, but over the first experiences, it was kind of captured me. Just ended up being something that I found it was really important work and really interesting.
Right.
Sort of aspects to it, I suppose, that were really challenging and engaging, I think.
Mm.
So it ended up being what I've been doing for the last 15 or so years.
Well, obviously, between your initial degree and the postdoctoral work you're working on now, there was a lot more education along the way, including your doctorate.
My education has been both a formal university education and really learning about life in remote Aboriginal communities and about the languages. So there's sort of like a, I guess you could think of it as a unrecognised education, which is me being an apprentice to, say, elders in remote communities.
Sure.
And then the formal education, I went back to do a PhD at the University of Queensland looking at one of the traditional languages from the Gulf of Carpentaria area, and the language is called Mara. It's an endangered language, so most of the people of that language group now speak the Creole that's spoken in northern Australia.
Right.
So I was sort of comparing aspects of those two languages for my PhD research.
Hmm. It's interesting you say that. We mentioned earlier in the podcast that there are roughly about 391 odd different Aboriginal languages and around 110 of them are under threat. Would that sound right to you?
Yeah, it's kind of difficult to put specific accurate numbers to these things, but yeah, that's kind of the rough figures that get quoted around, I suppose.
Okay. Well, Greg, I guess a very important question, and with the theme being our languages matter, what really is the importance of preserving our Indigenous languages?
I guess for me, the fundamental thing is that they're important to Indigenous people. So that is the core of it. If you go to Indigenous communities or you work with Indigenous groups, it's pretty universal that they'll say that their languages are important. So I guess my job has always been, as someone who has linguistics qualifications, to support Indigenous people and Indigenous groups in their endeavours to try and revive or revitalise their traditional languages. I mean, to me, that's sufficient, that if it's important to them, then who am I to say that, no, it's not an important thing and we shouldn't be investing time and money in that sort of work?
Absolutely. It is a huge part of our nation's history and culture, isn't it? It's not just an Indigenous issue, it's something that affects us all.
Yeah, and I think for me, what kind of opened my eyes back when I was a student studying linguistics is I just didn't know about Indigenous languages. And so when we were first told about how many there are, and then in linguistics, when you start to find out about sort of the grammatical structures and the interesting linguistic features of the languages, it's kind of a little bit mind-blowing. And you think, well, oh my gosh, all this was existing in Australia until very recently, and a lot of it is still there, but a lot of it has been lost. But, you know, this is an amazing patchwork of really complex and interesting languages that I just didn't know about until I was a university student. I guess for those reasons too, it's like, yeah, this is a really interesting, special, complex part of Australian life, culture and history that it'd be a shame not to pay sufficient attention to that.
Absolutely.
My island home. My island home. My island home.
Nobody can predict the future. Planning ahead can bring peace of mind to you, your family and your friends. Planning ahead can help you feel more confident that your financial, health, and personal wishes will be respected and followed if you are unable to act yourself. COTA Queensland have developed information sessions about planning ahead and how to identify key people in your life who know and respect you, and should they be required, will act on your wishes. COTA Queensland is offering these free sessions to discuss the importance of enduring powers of attorney. Trained peer educators will meet with your seniors group to provide information, resources and ideas to assist people to think about this topic and to start taking action now. Sessions are delivered in a user-friendly way by older Queenslanders who are trained in the topic and they volunteer their time and their skills. These one-hour sessions are free, interactive and available until May 2018 in various locations throughout Queensland. If you're part of a seniors group and think this session would benefit your members, contact bookings@cotaqueensland.org.au or phone 1300 738 348 for more information or to make a booking. A COTA Queensland team member will then contact you to arrange a peer educator and confirm the booking. This project is funded by the Queensland Government, Department of Communities, Child Safety and Disability Services, with the support of the Public Trustee.
You're listening to Radio COTA.
You did some work with a lady up in the Gulf of Carpentaria, helping to document and learn some of her language, the Mara language, before she passed away.
There's one community in particular that I've done a lot of work with over the years, and the community is called Ngokor, or Nukur, as English speakers say it, if they are struggling to pronounce it
when
properly.
When we get it wrong, yes.
Yeah. I first started working in that community in 2004, so you know, I've had an ongoing relationship with the community, and there's a number of languages, traditional languages of the community, and they're all endangered. So I really got a chance to spend a good couple of years working with the last few old ladies who spoke that language fluently. There's only a couple who are still alive now. So that was really special to be able to sit down with those old ladies and make a whole bunch of recordings and try and document some of their stories. So it was great.
We have in our news segment later on a piece on an Aboriginal elder in his very late years and believed to be, I think, the last speaker of his own native tongue. There's a lot of similar work going on there to document a lot of his stories and his songs. They're examples of what's being done. What else is being done to try and achieve this goal of preserving the languages?
It's really challenging because, you know, there are so many languages in Australia. So figuring out how to approach or address the issues of the loss of languages or how to support languages, part of it is trying to document what's still known. And then so I find in my community work, some of it's about documenting what's still there. Then it's working with adults and younger people who, I guess, want to be able to take on the role of trying to ensure those languages are still being learnt, at least to some extent.
Yes.
So I've done a lot of things of like helping community members to make resources in the language, teaching them how to read and write the language, or teaching them how to learn how to use some of the linguistics materials, which are usually quite dense and not very accessible. So you sort of have to do all this extra work to help community members to be able to access what's already been produced on the language. And then I guess the other thing is that they'll often be wanting to run educational programs for children. So then it's like, well, how do you train people to be able to teach the language and do it effectively and argue for those types of programs to be given space in the local school, which is sometimes a real challenge.
It would be. Yeah.
And then on top of all of this, it's how do you actually find some money and expertise to be able to do all this work. So it's a real challenge. There's sort of a lot of facets to it. There's a lot of ways that you can support languages. It's a big job. You know, everything helps. Because it's so difficult, it doesn't mean it's a reason not to
do it. Yeah.
Give it a go, yeah.
Yeah. My island home.
Radio COTA has been created for you, our listeners. Email us at radiocota@cotaqld.org.au to give us your feedback, offer topic suggestions, share your stories and let us know what interests you. Radio COTA is funded by the Department of Communities, Child Safety and Disability Services in Queensland. Send us a line, we would love to hear from you.
What are we listening to?
Radio COTA.
The Indigenous Affairs Minister, Nigel Scullion, said that more needed to be done to preserve the languages, but he made a comment of some $10 million being invested into that process. And he brought up the idea of, or a vision, if you like, of an hour a day for every primary and secondary student to learn an Indigenous language at school. What do you think of an idea like that?
Oh, look, that would be fantastic. The idea is great, but it needs the resources to be put behind it as well. I mean, the $10 million, it's not all about funding because there's a lot of people who do lots of work in kind and just go to programs and classes because they're interested in it. But yes, a lot of programs do need funding, and $10 million across the whole country and across 300 languages, that gets spread so thinly. People who work in the sort of language revitalization area, we look at what happens in New Zealand where they've got one language and they fund Maori programs to the degree of well over $100 million for the whole nation. And to have only $10 million spread across a larger country and 300 languages,
It's really hard. So, yeah, it'd be great for a school to offer that space in their curriculum to an Indigenous language program, but you also need financial support to pay teachers to make sure there's appropriate and effective resources to help that program to succeed and not just be a sort of a tokenistic program where kids are singing heads, shoulders, knees and toes endlessly for weeks and not really advancing in their language learning.
Beyond that.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you do touch on, I guess, the dilemma that we do have there in so far English is one language, French is one language, Japanese is one language. How do we educate our Australian people when we've got 300 variations to choose from? It's a difficult thing.
Yeah. That can be complex, but say there is a school who is wanting to establish an Indigenous language program. Mm. Often there'll be a local Indigenous group or authority you can go to and get advice on what the most appropriate language is. So, I mean, that can usually sort itself out fairly readily. That's not often the biggest hurdle. They might say, yep, okay, well, this would be the most appropriate language that you'd want to teach in your school.
Mm.
Sometimes the big challenge then is, okay, well, what is documented about that language? Especially in Queensland, where there's so many languages, where there actually isn't a lot of information available. So then it's a case of trying to source materials and develop resources. There's no textbook you can buy off the shelf.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, it's a real challenge once you find out what the most appropriate language to teach is.
Yeah.
And how to set up an effective program for it.
Absolutely. And there's the loop, really, isn't it? Because in saying that, there's not a lot of material available, that takes us right back to where we started from about the importance of that being recorded and so on.
Yeah.
I guess
yeah.
if you did have a school in an area where there was a local Indigenous group, they'd probably be more than delighted to share what they knew with the broader community to have more people getting involved in learning the languages and learning more of the culture.
Yeah. There's been some really positive stories about that happening. One example I've read about is in parks in New South Wales, where they've just done a great job in developing programs in all the schools in the town. I think the population of parks might be about 10,000 or so.
Okay.
So a decent-sized town. So they have Indigenous language programs running in all their schools now for all the children, not just Indigenous children. The feedback from that is that it helps relationships between Indigenous and non-Indigenous people. It's given Indigenous people working in the program a source of pride, as well as employment, something positive that they're doing in the schools and contributing. In places where programs have been put in place and have been working successfully, there's kind of a wide range of benefits that come out of it sometimes.
Yes.
So, yeah.
Mm. Well, folks, this morning our special guest has been Greg Dixon, and talking on the subject of NAIDOC Week, and specifically the Our Languages Matter theme that's run right through the week. And Greg, it's been an absolute delight and quite eye-opening for us, and very much appreciate your time.
My pleasure, Andy. Nice to talk to you.
All the very best.
Thanks very much. My island home, my island home, my island home is waiting for me. My island home, my island home, my island home.
You're listening to Radio Kota.
Here on Radio Kota, it's time for the news. This week, we're looking at the NAIDOC Week celebrations. They kicked off on Monday with an official flag-raising ceremony at Fogarty Park on the Esplanade in Cairns, which is this year's national host city. This marked the start of the week celebrating the history, culture and achievements of Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islanders. Commencing with the traditional welcome to country, Cairns Deputy Mayor Terry James officially opened the celebrations, saying, "It is really wonderful to see that each year the city's NAIDOC celebrations grow in energy, enthusiasm and attendance." Members of the 51st Battalion then raised the Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander flags alongside the Australian Standard. Queensland's Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander Partnership Minister, Mark Ferner, also a guest speaker at the ceremony, said that the government was committed to language preservation and revival. With the nation's second largest Indigenous population and increasing, Queensland has a vital role to play in helping communities preserve and reconnect with language and with culture. The crowd was entertained by a number of Indigenous dance and entertainment groups throughout the afternoon. In Cairns itself, the NAIDOC calendar featured 17 events throughout the week, in addition to the hundreds of others held throughout the state and right round the country. And of course, one of the most anticipated parts of NAIDOC week is the announcing of the award winners of the 2017 National NAIDOC Awards. So here they are. Drum roll, please, and the envelope, if you will. The winner of the Caring for Country Award, presented to Minjeriba Mugumpan Elders in Council Aboriginal Corporation from Queensland. The Youth of the Year Award went to Latia Schaefer, also from Queensland. The Award for Artist of the Year went to Elverina Johnson, yep, also from Queensland. The 2017 NAIDOC Scholar of the Year was awarded to Dr. James Charles from South Australia. The Apprentice of the Year awarded to Cherie Yamashita, also from Queensland. The Award for Sportsperson of the Year was given to Amanda Reid from New South Wales. And moving into the big awards, the Female Elder of the Year, a very popular recipient in Auntie Faye Carr, also from Queensland. The Male Elder of the Year went to Uncle Ollie George from WA. Now we'll share a bit more information with you about Uncle Ollie very shortly. And the big one, the Person of the Year Award, went to Patrick Patty Mills, Queensland and South Australia. Now, Patty Mills is an Australian professional basketball player of Torres Strait Islander descent and only the second Indigenous Australian ever to play in the top level of the American NBA basketball competition. So a huge congratulations to Patty Mills. And finally, the most prestigious Lifetime Achievement Award winner, Diane Ryder from WA. So it's a huge congratulations to all the very worthy winners and also to those who were nominated of the 2017 National NAIDOC Awards. Thank you so much for all that you've done for our nation and for your people. As we established earlier, the theme for the 2017 NAIDOC Week was Our Languages Matter. Preserving language is about more than just words, and few people know that better than Mount Magnet Elder and NAIDOC Male Elder of the Year, Uncle Ollie George. As the last remaining fluent speaker of the Badimaya language, Uncle Ollie has been working with the Bandiyara Era Wango Language Centre over the years to help preserve the culture of his people. A group of local artists and linguists recently joined the cause to help capture his extensive cultural knowledge in a new project. The ambitious venture will record the traditional stories and oral histories of the Badimaya people from the mid-1930s to today. The plan is to document and interpret 14 of Uncle Ollie's cultural and historic stories. The stories will then be recorded in locations integral to the narrative and will be spoken in Badimaya language and later translated. As the last speaker of the Badimaya language and at 82 years of age, it is vitally important that Uncle Ollie's stories continue to be recorded and produced for the revitalisation of the Badimaya language and for the Badimaya people. The Indigenous Affairs Minister, Senator Nigel Scullion, said more needed to be done to preserve languages of Australia's First Peoples. We invested some $10 million some time ago into the protection and investment in languages. I'd certainly like to see something like a vision where an hour a day every primary and secondary student gets to learn an Indigenous language, he told ABC television. Shortly after Senator Scullion's comments went to air, social media was awash with comments from people who thought that such a program would be a great idea and would be a most effective way of preserving the languages of Australia's Indigenous people. In a recent paper published in the Medical Journal of Australia titled Improving Shared Understandings Between Health Professionals and Remote Indigenous People, the University of Adelaide's Head of Linguistics, Dr. Robert Amery, said that the communication gap between health professionals and Indigenous Australians has a significant impact on health outcomes. In the paper, Dr. Amery goes on to state that limited health literacy is not confined to Indigenous people, but it is greatly magnified for speakers of Indigenous languages. The communication gap is most pronounced in remote areas where cultural and linguistic differences are greatest. The close relationship between language and culture amplifies the gap, so that communication difficulties in these communities run deeper than language barriers alone. The communication gap, as a contributor to shorter life expectancies for Indigenous Australians living in remote areas, has been underrated and under-researched. An understanding of the Indigenous language landscape is critical to improving communication. In the 2011 Australian Census, 60,550 people, or 11.8% of Indigenous respondents, claimed to speak an Indigenous language at home, and 17.5% claimed not to speak English as well. More have difficulty with specialised language, with common terms such as infection, tumour, high blood pressure, stroke, and bacteria often misunderstood. Native Indigenous language speakers communicate in over 100 different traditional languages and live primarily in the Northern Territory, the Kimberley region of Western Australia, Northern South Australia, and Northern Queensland, including Torres Strait. None of these languages have more than 6,000 speakers individually, and many are now reduced to a mere handful. Yet each of these languages is a vast storehouse of knowledge built up over thousands of years. It can be daunting to enter a large English-speaking hospital if you communicate in a language spoken by so few people. For most Aboriginal people in remote areas, their Aboriginal English is an interlanguage variety, in the same way that Japanese speakers have their own distinctive accent and turn of phrase in English, which may be a challenge for medical personnel to understand. Now, data suggests that less than 10% of Indigenous adults under 60 do not speak English well, and that communication issues would therefore not be significant. However, while many speakers of Indigenous languages living in remote areas can engage with outsiders and converse in English about everyday matters, they often have a poor grasp of English when it comes to health communications and in other specialised areas. In a study on comprehension of 30 common legal terms, East Arnhem Land people were surveyed, with over 95% unable to correctly identify the meanings of those terms. Although a parallel health study has not been conducted at this stage, it is likely that the understanding of common specialised health terms would be no better. These communication gaps are confirmed in health settings. A study of patients undergoing dialysis in Darwin identified, through exit interviews, significant misunderstanding of test results, despite both patient and nurse having revealed that they were satisfied with the communication. It is estimated that a large percentage of communication with some remote Indigenous patients fails, even with an Aboriginal health worker involved. Aboriginal health workers are not necessarily trained interpreters, nor is interpreting their primary role, although they are often expected to interpret. Dr. Amory concluded his paper by asking the simple question, how do we improve? He went on to say that surprisingly simple communication methods, which are easy to teach within mainstream medical education, can help. Many speakers of other Indigenous languages do not understand the concept of percentages. In one case, a picture of a kidney was drawn, shading in the 2% still functioning and showing the remainder, which was damaged. The patient was better able to understand the situation, was more informed and happier to participate in their dialysis. Silence plays an important role in Indigenous cultures. Indigenous people often respond to questions after a prolonged pause, a concept foreign to many doctors who often see silence as impolite in their own cultures. They compensate by filling the silence and disrupting the patient's thoughts. There is a simple solution. Pause and allow the patient to think. There is an urgent need to pay more attention to communication needs of remote Aboriginal people. Education is the way forward for medical staff who contribute to the health and pride of the people who are Australia's national treasures. And finally for this week's show, a special call out on behalf of our friends at the Red Cross. The Red Cross is seeking volunteers to assist with social support or home visiting. Now, Telecross volunteers make daily phone calls to check on the well-being of older people who live alone or who may be disabled, frail, or at risk of falls. If you are keen to make a difference and this is something you might be interested in doing, please consider a few hours each week. If you would like to obtain further information or to volunteer your services, please contact 1300 88 56 98. That number again, 1300 88 56 98. It's been great to have your company again this week, folks. Thank you so much for joining us. We look forward to catching up with you again next week. In the meantime, take care of yourselves and be safe. Radio Kota is produced by Riversong Productions for the Council on the Aging Queensland.
You're listening to Radio Kota.